kuatai te wā mō Scorpio Book Spotlight e arotake ana I ngā puka puka pāpai.
Yes, it's time for one of my favourite segments of the week. It is time for the Scorpio Books Spotlight, and we have the lovely Renata in the studio with us. How are you?
Morena, I'm good, thank you.
Yeah. How's life?
Life is ticking along.
Ticking along, yeah. We're both relieved we've avoided illness at this point.
Dodging the bullets.
Yeah, very much so. So, books. What's going on?
Well, there's so many amazing books, it's always hard to choose one.
Yes, I think Josh last week said, like, there's just so many books at the moment.
Yeah, it's just, like, sometimes in the bookstore it can just feel quite overwhelming.
Yeah, I
have these moments of like, oh my God, I can't read them all. It's sort of panic-inducing.
How do you pick?
In this weird kind of psychic way where I sort of wander around going,
Love that.
Like, speak to me.
Oh, no, I think that's brilliant. And has it worked?
Yeah, it usually works okay, pretty well. Cool. I also read, like, you know, the blurbs on the fronts of books.
That might help.
For recommendations from authors that I like. So if it's it's got a little thing from someone who I love, go and read this. I'm like, okay.
That is true. That's a good sign, actually. Yeah, yes.
Absolutely.
So what are we, what's on, what are we reviewing this week?
We're going to talk about a book called Cahokia Jazz by an English author called Frances Spufford.
Cahokia.
Cahokia Jazz.
Yeah. Is it a type of jazz?
Cahokia is a place. So this is a speculative history, this book. Well, it's a mad genre mashup. It's a speculative history, it's a crime noir thriller.
Oh my God.
And it's a love story with some jazz thrown in, just in case.
Hey, fair enough. Yeah. We need more jazz in our lives.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So Cahokia was a real city. A centre, a huge community, like the largest the largest community of people outside of Mexico before Columbus arrived in the US.
Oh, right, okay.
And then we know the decimation that followed.
Yes,
and so
colonisation and all that.
All that's sort of left of Cahokia now is these burial mounds that are a UNESCO heritage site.
Wow, really? Okay.
But Frances Spufford, it's a speculative history where he takes the idea that, like, a what if the smallpox variant that decimated the native population was a different variant that was much less aggressive and killed far fewer people.
Yeah.
So in his book, Cahokia has continued as a thriving metropolis.
Yeah, right, of course.
And it's ruled by a Native American dynasty.
Yeah, right.
So it's kind of like sends a history off on an alternative timeline. There are lots of things that we know from the real existing timeline.
Yeah. You could definitely draw, like, conclusions about, like, how the culture works and stuff and all that.
Yeah. So he's kind of melding in a really interesting
That's
way.
That's quite fun.
This imaginative world with a familiar one.
Wow, right, okay.
So there's still a lot of the underpinnings of American history, like the World War II has just happened. This is the 1920s.
Oh, okay.
World War One. I mean. So
it's set in the 1920s.
It's set in the 1920s.
Interesting.
The two main characters, two detectives, are war veterans. They've both got sort of degrees of trauma from the war.
Right.
And, so you're launched into the jazz age. Criminal underworld,
the
Ku Klux Klan is developing, the sort of racist underpinnings and violence.
Of course,
there.
I kind of see why it's taking this sort of like crime noir route.
Yeah, sort of. I mean, and it's got all of that. It's got So for people who love that sort of hard-boiled crime, he's really got a lot of that in there too. And the main character is, you know, he's a classic kind of version of that tall, dark, and silent type.
Okay.
He's the good cop and the sort of good cop, bad cop. Pairing between these two partners. One of them is sort of may or may not be kind of in the pocket of some of the crime bosses. So it's kind of it's got that whole tension of will this man who's kind of always been able to sort of operate through turning a blind eye to some of the things that go on around him. Will he choose to do the right thing in this world?
So does the story follow them, like, solving a crime?
Yeah, and this is one of those things where it's pretty difficult to talk about the plot of stories like this because you don't want to sort of trip into any spoilers.
And it's kind of treading on eggshells here a little bit.
But I can say that it opens with a murder.
Yeah.
And the murder has been done in such a way that it implicates the native population. It's kind of like it looks like some sort of sacrificial killing there's been a knife, a particular kind of knife left at the crime scene. But it's, you know, it quickly becomes apparent that it may have been sort of very tidily set up to look like that, to implicate some people. So it becomes a tension between these two cops. Like, one of them is pursuing this idea very kind of rabidly that I know who we're going to pin this on. And the other one's starting to go, wait a second.
So are these detectives, are they pals? Are they like friendly with each other?
Yeah, they are.
Oh, okay.
They are, but there's the white cop, Finn, has got a kind of a raging drug problem and is extremely difficult for everybody around him. Another kind of crime noir standard. The cops, you know, got their own dark
among
issues.
Themselves, you know. So tell me, because obviously this novel kind of it has its own story going on in amongst characters and all that. How much does like the whole it being in a like real but not real place, how much does that like how much should they explore that?
Well, he's a really clever writer, and this is something that Francis Spufford
Spufford.
His name.
That's a great name.
And he actually only wrote nonfiction up until he wrote his first novel at 52. But even his nonfiction, people have it's kind of got almost a sort of there's a, like fiction elements kind of through his nonfiction. So it was like he was sort of heading in this direction for a long time. And he's another of his books is called Light Perpetual, and that's based on a real bomb that went off in London during World War II, which killed 168 people or something. And it landed on a Woolworths store. And he takes 5 children who died in the bomb and then tells their life stories as they had lived.
Really interesting.
So
that's
he kind of loves highlighting the fact that story is an imagined world. Like you build
a
reality
by
imagining it. And that's what you do when you read it as well as when you write it.
Yeah.
So it's really his focus is so much on what a story does to our brains, how it activates that kind of imaginative visualization capacity.
Totally.
Yeah.
And also always say, like, it dares to answer that big question, you know, like, because you always wonder what would be different had certain things not happened in life and all that, and throughout history and all that.
And it's a great way of kind of upending those sort of certainties that,
we know
this is true, that's true, this happened. But it's like, it's what if something else.
And yeah, yeah. I mean, totally. I mean, it is really smallpox that wiped out kind of that continent. And if it weren't for, you know, just a little passing of bacteria or whatever, the whole power dynamics of the world could be totally different. Yeah,
could have been. I mean, I've read other reviews where reviewers did sort of say, yeah, but there was also kind of the genocidal, violent impulse that still,
true.
You know, like...
Yes, absolutely.
That might have just done the exact same thing. Let's not forget that.
True, yes, yes, that's very true.
But it kind of, it does have really interesting parallels as well with the kind of modern day America too, because...
Yeah, right, right.
You know, it's looking at a scenario where there is this very tenuous kind of power balance and democracy is operating on a very fragile footing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's always kind of being threatened by the violence and the hatred and the power plays. And,
totally.
Yeah, so...
always got a message to send, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I've read a few people say, you know, how come it takes a Brit to write a book that's this perceptive about America and the way it operates?
I was about to say that. I was like, oh, is it... Like, can you kind of tell it's a British person, like in America?
I don't know. I mean, he's well versed in the kind of language of that hard boiled crime noir stuff. So
of course.
He brings a lot of that to it, and he's a great kind of choreographer as a writer. He does his fantastic set pieces where the tension just builds and builds and builds. And yeah,
that's
so it's very cinematic,
gift,
and you do kind of, I wonder whether someone's trying to get the film rights to this, because it does really have that feeling.
Oh, it wouldn't surprise me if someone... Oh, obviously he's quite a history nerd, like he loves his history.
Yeah, I think he really does. But I read this quite cool quote where he said, I like the complicated, fractured, broken up, difficult surface of the real world, and I like things that resist being written about. So he kind of heads into the challenge, you know. It's like he's not like trying to stake out some well-known territory at all. He's like,
how can
I make this more difficult?
Yeah,
I know.
Yeah, you got to admire that.
Yeah,
that cannot be easy.
And it's sort of it's just really fun as well.
Yes.
It's a fun, gripping kind of. So it's got stuff in there for. Like, so many people could access this book from different points because it's got
world that's really interesting observation, actually.
Right. And the love story is really satisfying as well. It's kind of on a lot of levels. It's like,
okay.
I think you could of find a place where you enjoyed this book.
I feel like love stories are intentionally never satisfied anymore. Do you find that?
Yeah, I mean, I don't kind of read a lot of like romance.
Will
be often sort of
Neither,
subplot in something for me. So, but yeah, I think we can get kind of jaded about it now.
I think like it's all sort of been done a little bit. Well, I don't know.
So
don't
quite
know.
Often when you have that historical romance, it has got that much more sort of. That there's the chivalry and there's the kind of slow burn and things that maybe wouldn't be quite so much a part of it.
That's why, like, you know, like Downton Abbey and Bridgerton, that's why they're all so popular.
I know, people love that because it's
all
not like,
chivalry and
you know,
bleh.
Swipe right and let's hook up.
I can't stand it. It's so insufferable to me. Anyway, that's...
Yeah, no, I find it pretty insufferable sometimes, yes, definitely.
One more time, what's this book called?
It's called Cahokia Jazz.
Cahokia Jazz.
Yeah.
And sounds like... you know, it's one of a kind, really,
There's a couple of things that he almost sort of name checks in there as well. There's a book by Michael Chabon, a Jewish-American writer, where he sort of imagines an alternative history in which a Jewish state is set up in Alaska following World War II.
Oh, wow.
And the state of Israel has collapsed. And
right.
So there's quite a few people have done, there's versions where, you know, like, Germany won the war and then,
yeah,
you know, so
yeah, yeah.
There, it's a little subgenre of its own, the kind of what if history.
Yeah, the what if history. Yeah. I love that.
Yeah.
Well, Renata, thank you so much for joining me this morning. It's always
a pleasure
to have you here. And you off to Scorpio Books now?
Sure am.
Busy day ahead, yep. I'm sure.